Crisis Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
What's up, guys? Scott McNally here at Vices Radio 71. Huge as fuck is back. You guys have been asking for it, and this time we've got IFBB Pro, Big Ron Partlow. He's coming to us from West Coast Iron, the place to be when you're training in BC, British Columbia. I just made that up. It is in British Columbia, but that's not their slogan. I know it's cheesy, so don't blame them. Blame me. He's got a badass gym. We're going to talk all about that. And of course, we are going to talk about what it took to bust past 300 pounds, what it's going to take you to reach your goals. But wait, that's not all. I know that sounded like a game show host, right? There's more. We've got Eric Markowitz. He's back with us on the mic, and this time he is going to tell us about heart health. We're going to talk about the supplements that you can add into your program to stay healthy, because yeah, we want to get big, we want to put on the most muscle we can, but we want to live to tell about it too. So let's listen to Ron, and after that, the last 30 minutes is dedicated to Eric, dedicated to heart health. A lot to learn there, guys. Grab your pen and paper for that second half. You will learn some shit. All right, guys, let's get to Ron. Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally, and with me today, IFBB Pro, Ron Partlow. Ron, thanks for being with me, brother.
You know I love doing this shit.
I know you do, man. I know you've been a busy guy, though. Everybody's asking me, get Ron to do a podcast. Get Ron to do a podcast.
Yeah, it's starting to get ridiculous. I get it all the time.
Do you?
And it's, you know, at first I thought people were just being nice, right? You know, I should do another podcast. I was like, oh, thanks for the sympathy. But, you know, All Bull's been done for like over a year now, I think.
Yeah.
And people still telling me you got to do a podcast. And then I went on Nick Trigilli's show a couple weeks ago, and the feedback on that's been really like shocking. The number of people that messaged me and said, holy crap, that was a good interview. And I don't know, I'm just really amazed that people liked it so much. So, and I really do want to get back into it. So thanks for having me on.
Oh man, absolutely. You know, we talked back at the Arnold, and you know, I remember you saying at the time you had been really busy up until about then. You were saying, but time's gonna free up a little bit. Tell me, man, what have you been so busy with?
Well, last October, well, I guess it was last August, September, myself and a couple of guys, we decided to open a gym. So we didn't have much time to put it together, and we opened October 15th, and it's just been crazy. It's going really well, but man, it's been a lot of work. The gym's called West Coast Iron, and it's out in Port Coquitlam, BC, which is just outside of Vancouver.
Nice.
And so we just had a huge weekend with the Vancouver Pro in town, because we were the official gym of the Van Pro, and we're only about 10 minutes from the venue, so we were just clobbered for 5 days straight with, you know, all the friends and relatives and coaches and people coming to train and athletes doing their last workouts and people Instagramming and all the pros signing the wall. And it just went crazy. And it was everything that we hoped it would be. You know, we were hoping for a killer weekend, and it was just a complete home run for us. So, you know, we're so glad everyone kind of went back home with, you know, how much they enjoyed the gym fresh in their mind. Like, we got so many compliments, like, this gym's awesome, and holy, what an atmosphere. And everyone was just amazed. And, you know, because when you do a business yourself, you know, you're still looking at all the things you need to improve, right?
Sure.
You know, like, I'm still thinking, oh, we need another step mill, and we need to get another pec deck, and, you know, our dumbbells are a little rattly, and, you know, but people just didn't give a shit. They just loved it. Like, the, you know, cause we got a lot of great stuff too. We got some Arsenal leg equipment. We got a bunch of good old hammer strength stuff. We have iron plates and iron dumbbells that people seem to really like.
Nice.
And then it's just the atmosphere. You know, we got like a really cool room. So blasting AC/DC and gangster rap, and nobody does that anymore.
Man. And from what I understand, I had a friend who was out there. You guys actually let everybody in for free for the weekend, right?
Yeah, fuck yeah, for sure.
Dude, that's nuts, man. That's so cool.
we, we wanted to let everyone know that, like, we mean business about being the gym in Vancouver, you know? And, so we just did an open house for everybody. So it's just free for everyone. So we had hundreds of people train for free, but it comes back to you.
Sure.
You know, it comes back to you.
I think about, like, when I go out to the Arnold, you know, there's a couple places that I've liked to train, and it almost becomes a ritual. When I go back to the Arnold, then I want to go to Powerhouse downtown. You know, I want to go to this place. Yep. I want to go to that place. So, yeah, I mean, I think West Coast Iron, that's going to be, like, tied with the Vancouver Pro now. And you know, every time people come in town, they're going to want to check it out. Hell, I've got a client who lives down here in the States who specifically went there to train at your gym, hung out for a week.
Oh, which client's that?
Matt Marshall?
Oh, yeah, of course. Matt came up for sure.
Yeah. He came out there just to see the gym, just to hang out.
Yeah, I know. It was awesome. He came in and he trained. And, you know, the other owners were like, this guy came to train here? And I was like, yeah, I know him from bodybuilding. Because I met Matt down in Texas. He competed down there at Johnny Jackson's show and I was emceeing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I helped him for that one.
Yeah, so I met him down there and he said he was going to come to the gym. And I was like, okay.
You know whatever, but, you know, right?
People say that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he messaged me, I'll be through the doors in a couple hours. And he showed up. And, I mean, that's pretty awesome. When we opened, I was hoping to have, you know, that gym that people travel to train to.
Yeah,
I also kind of had a fantasy that one day someone would move so that they could train there, you know, because yes. I did that when I was younger. I moved to train at the best gyms, you know, like when I first moved to Edmonton, I looked, okay, well, what's the best gym? And at the time it was the old Gold's gym that isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
So I moved to a specific area of the city to train at that gym. And then when that gym closed, actually moved across town to train, so I was close to the other gym that was awesome, you know.
No kidding, man.
So I've moved to train at gyms, and I thought, you know, I don't know if people do that anymore, but I hope they do for ours, and I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I feel like, you know what it is? Maybe you didn't have the extra, you know, step mill that you wanted or a piece of equipment that you've got your eye on, but you've got that heart and you've got that passion, and you own this place because you love it, you know.
Well, that's, everyone says that the gym just feels like really feels like home, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a good feeling. And I mean, let's face it. I mean, you can't compete with the corpo gyms if you play that, you know, if you're going to try to be, you know, if you're going to have $1 million bathrooms and fix up your stuff and try to play their game, they're just going to destroy you because they have multiple locations and you can't compete with that.
Sure.
So you just have to completely forget what they're doing. Ignore them. Don't pay any attention to them because nothing they're doing is relevant to you.
Yeah.
And just do a gym. Do it the right way. Treat everybody really good. I think a big part of what we have at the gym actually is, you know, like I worked in bars for 15, 16 years, right?
Okay.
And when you have a pub, like a rock pub or, you know, Irish pub or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I worked in some bars that were incredibly successful and fun to hang out at, but they weren't that nice.
Mm.
And it was because the people and everyone knew your name and you get welcomed coming through the door and they remember your drink and they know and all that stuff. And you don't get that at corporate gyms. So, you know, I think the gym business is largely, it's just like the service industry. I mean, people want to come in and they want like a, hey, Dave, how's it going? It's leg day today, isn't it? You know, like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they get that, I think it makes a huge difference because nobody at the corporate facilities knows your name or gives a shit what you're doing or, you know.
No.
So we just give them that. And I think that's the difference maker.
That's huge, too. How do you feel about this? I feel like there's a lot of younger guys out there who haven't had this experience. You know, they come up lifting and they've been training at, you know, whatever it is, LA Fitness, you know, that's a mile from their house since the time they started lifting. A lot of guys just haven't had what you're talking about.
Well, that's exactly it. And actually, I don't know if you've seen it, but I know you're aware because we've talked, but I have that mutant show called Mutant on a Mission.
Absolutely, man. I was going to ask you more about that if you've had any new ones going on.
But yeah. So that show is, we're in our fourth season now. And we just released an episode a couple weeks ago from King's Gym. I trained legs with James Hollingshead.
Oh, I don't know how I missed that, man. I love James, dude. How did that go?
Oh, great. It was a great workout, great episode. It went over really well, but that's the whole reason why we started that show was because I was traveling with Mutant. We were going to all the expos, but I mean, back when Rich was with us, remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were going around and I kept saying like, man, I'm, cause one of the things I do is whenever I meet somebody at the booth, you know, I think it's the bartender in me, but I always make the small talk like, hey, where are you guys from? You know, where do you guys train? And I don't know, asking someone where they trained was just a normal question to me, but I was shocked at how many people were like, well, I train at the LA Fitness by my house.
Right. Right.
Or the 24-hour fitness. And then there was this one time I met a kid from LA and he goes, oh, you know, I'm a huge bodybuilding fan. I love bodybuilding. And I go, where do you live? He goes, LA. And I go, oh, I go, well, you know, you must go down to Gold's Venice. And he goes, right. I've never been there.
Really?
And I go, what do you mean you've never been there? And he's like, well, it took an hour and a half from my house and I don't have a car.
Huh.
And I was like, oh shit. There's like, cause I mean, when I was a kid, that wouldn't have stopped me.
No, no, no. You, I'm halfway across the country and I want to get out there, you know?
I mean, I would have wrote, you know, it's yeah. I thought, man, there's a lot of people that have never been to a real gym.
Yeah.
And so that's where the idea was to do Mutant on a Mission, was just to try to expose people to these incredible gyms and get them motivated to seek them out and, you know, put in the effort to go train at these gyms and support them and, you know, make them better and all that sort of stuff. So that's where the show came from. And I guess that just sort of bleeds right into owning a gym myself, you know?
That makes total sense. So I guess we should probably see a Mutant on the Mission at your gym.
Well, it's on the list.
Yeah.
I feel funny about doing my own gym. You know,
I can see what you mean.
It's like painting a portrait of yourself. It's like pretty, pretty narcissistic, you know, the other guys, my partners though, they're excited. You know, they obviously, you know, getting any extra exposure for the gym is going to be helpful, but I've kind of got West Coast Iron penned in as the final episode of this year.
Ah, no kidding. Where are you heading next?
Well, we have a trip down to Southern California to Metroflex Marietta.
Okay.
Yeah, you can find it on Instagram. The guy's name is Ryan. He's a cool dude. He's got a really cool looking community at his gym, man. There's, you know, it's down in that Inland Empire area down by Orange County there.
Okay.
And he's got a hell of a setup. And I saw his gym on Instagram. He opened about the same time we did. And he's just smashing it with his social media and getting a crazy crew of characters in there. And I like his gym. So I said, man, I want to bring my show to your gym. And so we're pretty excited to get down there at the end of the month. We've got another episode coming out right away from Muscleworks in London.
Oh, nice.
The original Muscleworks location moved a couple blocks. So they got a new building now and we went there and trained. And so that episode's going to be out soon. And then the Marietta episode. And then after that, there's a bunch of locations on the list. We just have to kind of figure out, you know, it's a lot of it's logistics with travel and
I bet,
you know, timing it and stuff like that. So, but there's a couple more, even the Arsenal Strength Factory is on the list. So I might be going to Tennessee to do a Mutant on a Mission at the Arsenal Strength showroom in the factory there.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
So, you know, just kind of stepping back for a second, you know, you talked about this kid who had never been to Gold's Venice, even though he didn't live too far away. And you talked about a little bit about how, you know, the corporate gyms are hard to compete with. A while back, anybody who's been listening to Advices Radio for a long time, we had Ron on for an episode I called The Death of the Hardcore Gym. One of the things I thought was really important and it got me thinking was, you know what, maybe the price is going to be a little bit higher at a family-owned gym. But at the same time, man, you said that it's worth it. And you know what? Something you said that changed my mind forever. You said, you know what? I don't ever like go into the gym for free. If I'm traveling and they want to let me in, you know, you want to pay your way in because you want to support those places.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people won't take your money, you know, but
yeah.
Some of the people are pretty friendly, but yeah, I mean, I love paying a drop in at that type of gym. It's, you know, it's a 24-hour fitnesses that want to charge you $25. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sakes.
Right, right.
But, you know, but if I go to a privately owned gym like ours and they're like, you know, it's $10-$15. I'm like, no problem. I got
sure.
No problem paying, you know. And another thing, too, is, you know, you have to ask yourself, okay, well, do you want to pay, you know, do you want to pay $20 a month and have, you know, 200 kids on their phone in the way?
Hmm.
Or do you want to pay $45 a month and have nobody in your way, only people that are there to work out, no one wasting time on their phone sitting on the leg press, and just, you know, have your workout go way smoother and more efficiently and have all the weights put away and everything's kind of tidier I mean, it's not even comparable to me.
Yeah.
And also people say crazy stuff to me. They're like, you know, how much are your memberships? And I'll say, you know, whatever the price is that month is $40 or whatever. And they're like, oh, that's a little steep.
Yeah.
Like, really? Gyms were $35 in like 1991.
Good point.
gym prices have not gone up. In fact, they've actually gone down and gotten cheaper because the corporate gyms have, you know, flooded the market with these, they call it a low cost model.
Okay.
But there's also a lot of gyms with the low cost model that are failing too. I mean, I see these big corporate gyms, these new era Gold's gyms and LA Fitnesses and stuff. I see auctions coming up all the time online, like where the whole gym's just for sale, you know, come clean us out. And I mean, it doesn't surprise me when they have a model like that and there's, you know, no staff putting weights away and no one cares and stuff sits out of order for 3 months straight and you know, that sort of nonsense that you get at a lot of those corporate places.
Yeah. One thing I remember while we were talking in Columbus, you said, you know, you've got your hardcore guys there, the guys that are training really hard, but they get along with like just the average people. You also have average people, old ladies that are listening to AC/DC and loving it, right?
Oh yeah. We got a great crowd in there. I mean, I think people look at the social media and they think, oh, you got a room full of bodybuilders, but, you know, part of that is because, you know, we do a lot of reposting on the story, you know, like the story with that new repost feature on IG, it makes it really easy to repost other people's content.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, the majority of people that are posting in the first place are, you know, fit fam,
right?
You know?
Right.
So you get like a lot of the hot girls posting and you repost their stuff and a lot of the dudes, you know, pulling deadlifts and you repost their stuff. So people look and go, oh, it's a room full of hardcores, but that's just because a lot of normal people don't post anything.
Yeah.
So it doesn't give us any content to you know, push out. So I really like it when the trainers post stuff because a lot of their clients are more normal people.
Ah.
And then that gives us a bit more like normal person cred to repost, you know? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Just trying to get as much on your story as possible. It seems like the Instagram story is all about just pushing out as much as you can.
Yeah, or be forgotten views. About, right?
Yeah.
You have to keep doing it.
Yeah, it sort of changed it. Like, like, you know, when you make an actual Instagram post?
Yeah.
Those are more strategic and, you know, you think about what you're doing and what's going on in the gym and what do you want to showcase and all that sort of stuff. But with the stories, you just want massive amounts of stories. You just want as many as you can get out. So we just repost everybody's. But it makes the gym look pretty hopping, though, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. So, you know, we're talking about business at this point, but this business all revolves around, you know, your love, our love of the sport of bodybuilding, and not even the sport, but just the act of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
I really want to dig into some of that. Let's talk muscle. And I want to know just, you know, we got a lot of guys out there that are listening that are, you know, a lot about podcasting is looking for education, trying to learn, trying to be better. And, you know, we can turn to a guy like you, Ron, who's put on a substantial amount of muscle over the years. Let's talk about what we need to do to get started here. What's the foundation? And we're not even going to go to the drugs because I know that that's just all secondary. Let's talk nutrition. Let's talk weights. What is your belief system when it comes to just putting on the most amount of muscle that you possibly can?
Yeah, so I look back on what I did when I was starting out, and I started pretty young. You know, I was only 14 when I started at the gym, right?
Okay.
So, you know, from the time I was 14 to the time, you know, I was deep into my 20s, I was training progressive overload.
Okay.
I mean, I was just in the gym to get stronger. I mean, that's back when the old, you know, people used to say, if you just get stronger, you'll get bigger, you know,
sure.
You know, strength and size are deeply related.
Yeah.
You know, they're not directly correlated, but they're, you know, first cousins.
Yeah.
I remember someone telling me that, you know, they're first cousins, they're not married, but they're first cousins. So you try to get, you know, if you get one, the other will come. And then of course, Dorian happened. I mean, that happened shortly after I started training. So, I mean, I was completely enamored with Dorian and his philosophy and every article that came out. I mean, you know, I was bodybuilding when he got second at the 1990 Night of Champions, right? So, I mean, right off the bat, I was, who's this guy? This guy just, you know, the first article I read was like, oh, this guy does things differently. And I actually trained just like Dorian, like, and I'm talking exactly like Dorian.
No kidding.
From 1991 to, geez, probably like early 2000s.
Okay.
And I trained very low volume, extremely high intensity, progressive overload style, 4 days a week. Like, I wasn't even training 5-6 days a week. I thought it was all about rest and recuperation and all that stuff that was being preached back then.
That's a huge note I think a lot of people are missing
today. Yeah. That's why I laugh at this no days off crew, this new hashtag, no days off. I'm like, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Good luck not growing ever. you know, good luck wearing everything out and getting exhausted and not wanting to go to the gym. Because the way I was training, like when I hear someone say they don't take days off, my first thought is, oh, you must train like a fucking pussy. Because I was so exhausted, I had to take days off. Like I remember the day after legs, I would feel like I played an NFL game.
Yeah.
And the whole day I would just be completely fried, like, you know, lethargic and dragging my ass everywhere because I was just so smashed from legs. And I remember, the idea of even being able to train the day after legs. I was like, oh, no way, you know. Yeah. It was just how we thought of it. We thought rest and recuperation. You know, Dorian was really big on, you know, go to the gym and smash it with a hammer and then go home and let it heal for several days, you know. And so I used to train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Okay.
That was my split for a long time. And I mean, I put on over 100 pounds doing that.
Wow.
And very simple workouts, all the basic moves. You know, I wasn't doing, you know, cable step back lunges. You know, there was no refining exercises. It was just leg pressing, squatting, hack squatting, leg extensions, puke in the parking lot, come back in. Do lying leg curls, standing leg curls, and stiff leg deadlifts and go home. You know, that was legs. And it was just exactly the same exercises, maybe change the order around a bit and just repeat for 15 years. And, you know, and then you're on the national stage at 250, you know. And that's just how simple it was.
How long does a workout like that take?
I remember training for like an hour to an hour and 10 minutes, four days a week.
Yeah, so you're getting in, you're hitting it hard, and you're getting out done.
It's like, you know, 3 good warm-ups, 1 all-out work set, move to the next exercise. 2 good warm-ups, 1 all-out work set, move to the next exercise. 1 warm-up, 1 all-out work set, move to the next exercise. You don't need a warm-up at that point. Go straight into a work set, done quads.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how simple it was. And it was just, it was all about intensity and forced reps and adding a negative and hitting some partial reps and maybe a drop set on one of them and maybe some rest pause on one of them. And, you know, just all those intensifiers to take you beyond failure. And it was always about progression, always trying to train heavy and keep the weights heavy all the way through the prep and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, eventually, you know, I'm not saying everything was perfect because looking back now, I should have done more kind of deloading here and there, taking more breaks, that sort of thing. And I did a lot of periodization too. Like I was some weeks I do double the volume, but not do any forced reps.
Okay.
You know, like I would do, okay, for this next 3 weeks, I'm going to do no forced reps at all. So just go to just to straight failure, but I'll do twice as many sets.
How would you know that you needed that at that time?
I don't know. It was just mixing it up. Like I remember Dorian saying once that he went 6 weeks all out. And then he would, like, for a couple of weeks, he wouldn't do any forced reps.
Okay.
So there wasn't, like, a math formula.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was like you didn't need a spreadsheet. It was just kind of, you know, by how you were feeling.
So you're listening to your body. You're feeling like maybe you weren't recovering as well for a little while.
Yeah. Okay. Especially if your strength regressed.
Ah, there you go.
Like, if you go in the gym and your strength goes down, like, let's say last week you got 7 reps and this week you get 5. You're like, okay, well, something's going on here. So I would, you know, maybe back off for a couple weeks and maybe take extra days off or something like that. I mean, we were really big on recovery in those days.
Yeah.
And I mean, people would probably look at the workout on paper. If you just looked at it on paper, you'd be like, oh, this is nothing. It's four days a week. But I just remember back then just being so sore all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So it was different. I stopped training, you know, as purely that way, because I started to get, you know, more injuries and I started to get more nags and certain exercises became sort of impractical. And You know, I switched to doing a little more volume, a little bit less of, you know, the six rep stuff. I sort of raised my reps up, and that was just wear and tear on the body, but it did work for a long time.
And I mean, by that point too, you probably had already gained the muscle, you know, that the mass that you needed. It wasn't about gaining another, you know, 30, 40 pounds, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I never feel like I never felt like I really got as big as I needed to get because of my height. You know, I always felt like I should have had more muscle on my frame, but I guess being a tall guy with long arms and legs, you're never going to really feel like you sort of limit out, you know?
Sure. I can see that.
But I mean, if you just look at, you know, like, so you're having me on today to talk about getting huge, right? Yeah. Here I'm thinking, well, you know, I never got as huge as I wanted, but, looking back, I mean, I got way huger than 99.99% of guys who ever touch a weight, right? So yeah. I guess that, you know, I do have something to say on the matter.
Hey, absolutely. And you became an IFBB pro in the process.
Yeah, you know, that was always the goal. And, you know, I mean, I've been 320, 325, 330. I've been really huge off-season body weights. I've, you know, I've been 265 on stage, you know, so I did get up there. So it was quite a lot of work. And I mean, if you ask what it takes to get really, really big, it's just so simple. It's just repeatedly doing the same things over and over for a really long period of time. And not changing your plan every month because you're not huge yet. Hmm. And just believing in the process of putting maximum amount of stress on the body, giving it a lot of rest so that it can actually progress, and trying to get as strong as you can in the process, and being consistent with food. Like, you know, I would look back on how consistent I was with my meals, and I mean, you know, there'd be a handful of days a year that I wouldn't get six meals in, you know, maybe five meals, like five times a year.
I imagine too, with your size, you've had to eat an awful lot of food.
Yeah. I force fed a lot, like where you gag on your food and think you're going to puke, and you have to come back a little later and finish your meal. And then by that time you have to start another meal.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, well, I'll turn my next meal into a shake because there's no way I can get it in. So you're blending up oatmeal and egg whites and protein and bananas to get your next meal in. And then after that, you can get another meal in, and you're just like I did that for so long. It was just so normal.
Yeah.
And now that I'm eating, you know, smaller meals and a little more diet food all the time and kind of staying leaner and all that sort of stuff, I look back on how I used to eat and I'm like, oh man, I couldn't do it again because I couldn't feel like that. I mean, I would feel bloated. I felt bloated for like 20 years, you know, like I just felt bloated all the time. It was just so normal. It didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
And then when diet time would come, that's why I always look forward to prep, because I love dieting because I wasn't bloated.
I bet. Yeah, I know.
I'd be like, feeling. Oh man, I get to diet. This is awesome. I don't have to eat so much food, you know?
What's your outside max in weight when you start to feel uncomfortable? You know, I've talked to different people about this. I was just talking to Adam Young about it, and he said, you know, like, you know, and Adam's a shorter guy, so he'll get up to like 245, and he said he still feels comfortable. Guys like Luke Sando, he can put on a ton of weight, and he said he never really feels it. But then there's other guys that, you know, they it starts to tax them, and then they start to really get out of breath. I think Adam said once he got above 245, that's when he would start to feel like heavier and, you know, harder to tie your shoes and stuff.
Yeah. So like right now I'm 285 to 290.
Okay.
And I really am shocked at how much size I'm holding because I'm doing very little supplementation, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, we can get into that later, but I'm doing very, very little of that. And I'm holding my weight just on how hard I'm training and how consistent I am with my meals. And I feel small at 285, 290. Do you know what I mean? Psychologically, I'm like, oh, I'm downsized, you know? Whereas like everyone else is like, you're downsized, you're still 290.
But you look huge, man, as far as I'm concerned.
It's just this, you know how our brains get all warped out, right?
Right.
And but I remember the first time I hit 300 pounds was like, I think it was like 2002 or something like that, off season.
Okay.
And of course that was like a Burger King 300, you know, like I remember my blood work was a mess, and my blood pressure was off, was like way out of control. My cholesterol was bad. I remember that was the only first time and only time I ever went to the doctor, and I was like, oh shit, I'm not healthy. But that's because I was shoveling in nonsense calories just to try to hit 300, because I was so focused on it. But now the 300, if I could just eat for a week and be 300 if I wanted.
No kidding.
And I would feel pretty good. I remember being 330. I worked with Chad Nichols in 2009.
Okay.
And I got up to 330 in the off season. And I remember thinking, like, this is not sustainable. I remember, like, going down the aisle at Costco and just leaning on the cart.
Oh,
and, man. Like, huffing and puffing and huffing and puffing and just hating going anywhere. Like, you know when you're bigger and you realize you have to go to the mall to pick something up?
You're just, like, oh, just barely. I can't relate on that level, but I'll say yes, I know.
You're just like, I can't believe I have to stop at the mall and walk into the mall.
Yeah.
And walk past a bunch of people and go pick up this stupid little thing that I need.
Yeah.
It was like the hugest chore in the world. And now it, like, you know, it was just, yeah, like 320 to 330 was a lot. You know, I didn't feel like I was very good at anything but training.
Okay.
You know,
were you strong, you know, then?
Oh yeah. Like, so, you know, I know some guys feel like body weight and strength doesn't correlate, but for me, it directly correlated.
Hmm.
The strongest I ever was on, especially for pressing movements. I don't know if it's because I got long arms, like I have pretty long arms. So maybe when I'm heavier, there's so much more tension through the shoulders and stuff that I get more spring.
Okay.
But like, I'm not a good presser. I'm not an impressive presser. But when I was 320, 330, those are the only times I was using weights where other people were like, oh shit, you're getting strong.
Wow.
You know? But at 285, 290, I can't press anywhere near what I press when I'm heavy like that. You know, just not as much tension, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, back on training just a little bit, when we talk about tension, we talk about the weights that we're lifting. How much of your focus was keeping the tension in the muscle? Because I think that sometimes people think about progressive overload, and what ends up happening is they just do whatever it takes to move another 10 pounds.
Yeah. So I remember when I got my copy of the Blood and Guts video, which was, I remember the day I got it, actually. I ordered it out of the back of Muscle Mag. And, of course, you just mail order it, right, back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no, you know, online order it. And then it takes so long to get to you, you forget you ordered it. And then, it was the day I started my diet for my first show.
Oh, perfect timing.
Yeah, I remember that. It was like a ceremonious opening of the package. I remember I got up that morning and I started my prep and I checked the mail and I was like, oh fuck.
Wow.
The video has arrived. This is a sign from the gods.
Yes, it's destined.
Right? This is Dorian telling me, go crush your show. You know? And I remember I put that video in and, you know, because I'd read everything that he'd done and I trained like him for years. But then to actually see him train was, I remember feeling totally confirmed in everything I was doing because I watched how he moved weights, you know, with the controlled negative and the explosive positive.
Yeah.
And how he did full range, like he pressed right to extension.
Yeah.
I remember seeing all that and thinking this, okay, I'm doing everything perfect. This is I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. So then my confidence was elevated, was jacked right up. Cause you know, if I would have watched that video and thought, oh man, I'm doing this all wrong, it would have been confusing, but I remember watching Blood and Guts and thinking, I don't have to change a thing. I just have to train exactly like this for the whole prep.
Yeah.
And so I think that because I was so focused on rep quality, and also I had a training partner once that used to say, every rep the same, every rep the same. Mm. That was like something he used to say.
Yeah.
You know, your first rep should look just like your last rep, except your last rep will slow down.
Yeah,
you know,
keeps you honest with people like that around you, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, all your reps should look the same, right? And so I remember focusing on that. So I guess that sort of kept me in line when it came to progressive overload, because there, you know, and then there'd also be. I remember I trained with one of my good friends back in the day, who was much better bodybuilder at the time than I was, John Davey from Australia. But I was living there. I was living there training with him, and I remember he used to every, you know, 5 or 6 weeks. He would say, okay, we're gonna go a little lighter today and we're gonna check our form.
Hmm.
It was like a phrase he used, like, oh, we're gonna check the form today.
Yeah.
And that was just like, just back off the weights a bit and just make sure your reps are perfect, because you don't ever want to forget the perfect rep and start getting sloppy on the progression, right?
Interesting.
So we'd back off a bit, we'd check our form for a week and make sure everything was robot. because that's another thing, robot reps. I say that to myself all the time. Every rep the same, robot reps, right? Huh. And I think that that's definitely a good way of making sure you're not getting out of, you know, you start doing stuff like you see guys on the incline and their shoulders are coming up to their ears.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're losing tension on the pecs, or, you know, they're putting their feet high on the leg press so they can move more weight instead of low. And they're just doing all these things to move more weight. You want to avoid that.
Yeah. You got to make it really harder on yourself, right?
Yeah. Which is, I guess, where I am now in my training as, because I'm older, you know, especially the last 6-8 years, I've been really focusing on making myself train in mechanically weak positions so that the muscle takes all the brunt and I'm not putting myself in as much risk and all that sort of stuff.
If you could go back, would you have changed anything in what you've done with training?
I would have done some high rep weeks. I think that would have saved me some injuries. Definitely not be so stubborn when something hurts. You know, there's tons of times I should have backed off, you know, a certain exercise, but you just go, just wrap the elbow up and hammer out one or two sets, you know?
Yeah.
Just being stubborn, I think, and not wanting to back off anything ever is kind of what cost me when it came to injuries and wearing out certain joints and, you know, having sort of like long-term aches and pains. It's kind of all came from that. I could have been smarter in that regard.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think there's always something we could have changed, and that's why I ask.
Well, one thing to think about Dexter Jackson.
Yeah.
He doesn't touch a weight for like 3 months post-Olympia.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's why he's still Dexter Jackson.
Right. He's going to be doing this forever, I think.
You know, it's just that. Yeah, it just gets his just imagine not training for 3 months. You'd have no inflammation anywhere.
Yeah, no. Hey, I take a vacation or something, or I'm away from, you know, I'm traveling and I can't train for 5 days and my body feels totally different, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's good. It's good.
So one word that came up a lot here, and this is an idea that I have a really hard time defining in radio, and that's intensity. It's not something tangible, not something you can hold on to. And for me, I found that in my life, I've redefined intensity over and over again. How can you try to translate to the listeners what intensity is and how to harness that?
So I had a coach named Scott Abel once.
Yes.
And Scott Abel's a Canadian coach. If you're not familiar with him, I know you probably are because you know everything.
No, I'm far from everything.
But you're a very, very aware guy. But Scott Abel was like a legendary Canadian coach for a long, long time. He turned like probably 20, 30 people pro up here. And he trained a lot of pros and stuff too. So Scott Abel used to have this thing that he would tell us. He'd be like, okay, intensity is a skill. That's what he would say. Think of it as a skill. And then he would say, be careful when you're reading anything written by a strength and conditioning coach, because they'll use the word intensity to define percentage of one rep max.
Okay.
Right? Like when you read a powerlifting program or you read like a strength and conditioning program written by an Olympic coach or something like that, they'll say, oh, this week is very intense. You're training with 90% of your one rep max.
Okay.
This week is low intensity. You're training with 65% of your one rep max. So because they're usually not training to failure. They're training to like prescribed rep ranges, you know, like repeated achievement of reps. It's almost like they're practicing and perfecting the movements.
Yeah.
So their definition of intensity is completely different. A bodybuilder has to think of intensity as pure effort towards the goal of hitting muscular failure and beyond. So that's how I would first make sure everyone understands, because a lot of people are going to read the odd thing and see the word intensity and it's written as a prescription of weight. It's not written as a definition of effort.
That's a good point.
So there's a little bit of confusion in the strength and conditioning world when it comes to bodybuilders, because we think differently about that word. Because I can train with a 40% weight and be very intense.
Sure.
Because you just rep out to absolute failure, do 2 forced reps and a negative, and that was an intense set, and you got 32 reps, but it was, you know, highly intense, right? Whereas a strength and conditioning coach would say that was like a low intensity set because the weight was light. So that's one thing. So you have to think of intensity as a skill. And I also thought of intensity as what's your state of mind between sets.
Huh.
I mean, and that's where I see intensity deeply and horrifically lacking in the gym nowadays, is people do their set and then they get on their phone.
Huh.
Or they go talk to somebody or they joke around. And I was always intense the entire time. So I would do my set and then my mind is immediately on my next set. Okay, what do I need to do? What is my goal? Okay, I need to incline this weight and I need to get six. I absolutely have to get six. So I'm thinking about six, 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 six for like 90 seconds, 2 minutes until I'm into the set.
Yeah.
So intensity was always like a light switch that got turned on at the beginning of the workout and it didn't get turned off until the workout was over. So it was the entire workout itself was intense. And that even meant the period between sets. My state of mind was intense. I was focused. I was directing my energy and my thoughts. I was rehearsing my set. You know, like I would stand in front of the leg press and I would rehearse the set. And then I would say to my set, I would say to myself, this set has already happened.
Mm.
Yeah. This set, I've already accomplished this set. I know I'm going to do it.
You're visualizing it.
I need 9 reps with this weight.
Yeah.
And I've already got it. I've seen it happen. I visualized it. I know I can do it. It's happened. Let's just confirm its existence.
Fuck yeah. I love that. That's so cool.
So that was how I would think. And, the typical meathead with my hat super low so nobody could make eye contact with me, headphones blasting, you know, we didn't put our hoods up back then. That's sort of a new thing, but we would have a real low hat.
Yeah,
real hat down past the eyebrows, like just above the eye sockets, you know, just to make sure nobody caught our attention and distracted us.
They're like my blinders. That's what I call that.
Yeah, like horse blinders, right?
Yep.
And so that was how I would think, you know, like this set has to be already accomplished in my rehearsal before I'll do it. So there was no time to, you know, check my phone or send a text. I mean, that was just the idea of that back then was just. Utterly, I mean, well, first of all, we didn't have the phones, but right.
And then they cost 25 cents a text. And but after that,
yeah, back in the day, you're not spending money while you're training,
right?
But yeah, it was just that was the intensity, and I don't see much of that anymore. And I think that that's a reason why we're not seeing a lot of huge guys right now.
Huh.
I mean, I see a lot of great bodybuilders that have a ton of potential. They have really nice physiques. They've got good shape and structure.
Yeah.
But they're competing in classic because they're not big enough to do the open.
Hmm.
And maybe they're working towards being big enough to do the open, which is an awesome goal. But I wonder, you know, if they had their hat low and their headphones louder and they were more focused on every single thing they're doing in the gym from the moment they start, you know, maybe it would come quicker for them. I don't know.
That's maybe a huge point, man.
I don't know. There's something about, I mean, what's the difference between a 230 pound bodybuilder who's putting in a whole bunch of work and a 260 pound bodybuilder who's putting in a whole bunch of work? I mean, they're doing the same things. These guys are eating the same foods. They're taking the same drugs. They're training on the same programs. You put the papers beside each other. Everything looks the same.
Yeah.
But there's something that is required to be that next level of ridiculous. You know, you were talking about getting huge here and like, why are only some guys able to get really, really big? And I mean, yeah, genetics obviously are part of it, but I never had great genetics. I mean, I was a skinny kid, you know, and I look back now and it was how I trained, man. I trained like barbaric. And I mean, people see me train now and they're like, man, you train really hard. And I'm like, yeah, but I train careful now. Like I'm a lot more careful than I used to be. But back then, I mean, I was just vibrating.
Yeah.
Like I would get on the bench and I would just be vibrating because I was just so aggro, so much pent up energy, so much pent up, like, you know, that whole mindset where you're, I'm going to war, you know,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But we didn't say those ridiculous things because we didn't have social media. So we just kept it to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't write going to war today. You know, there's nothing to write it on.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we wrote it on our notebook or something. Right. But yeah, that was just how it was. Your whole day was focused on that workout. It was the only thing that mattered. And especially to me, I mean, that's how I lived my life for a long time. And I look at the pictures of the pros and I'd be like, man, for me to get to that level, I mean, I'm going to have to kill myself in the gym because these guys are a lot better than me. And if I want to even get a sniff of that level of success, like the pro card,
yeah,
I mean, it's going to cost me. And that's how I always thought. And I guess maybe I realized and anticipated how hard it was going to be. Whereas maybe a lot of guys now, maybe they think it's going to come easier. I don't know.
Hmm.
Maybe it's because they give out way more pro cards now.
Hmm.
You know, back then, a pro card was like one guy a year.
Yeah.
So you're like, well, Jesus, if I want to be that one guy, I've got to be willing to die in the gym. Like, just, and I know to say that is like a ridiculous statement, but back then when you're young and you're in your 20s, saying I'm willing to die in the gym isn't as nonsensical, you know,
because no, chances for sure.
you're not gonna actually die in the gym, but you have to be willing to, you're like, I'm willing to, you know, and that's how we thought. So it was different. It was definitely different, you know.
Dave Palumbo said that in order to become 300 pounds, you have to visualize yourself at 300 pounds. Did you see yourself, you talked about visualizing in the gym during your set. Did you see yourself gaining the muscle before you gained it?
Yes. And another thing that Dave's totally right. And also another thing Dave said once, he told me personally, because I almost hired Dave one time.
Okay.
Back in like 2002 at my first Olympia, I went and I found Dave at the booth and he was standing there in a tank top, just completely freak show.
Always.
300 pounds, just completely covered in veins. And of course, not even joking, he was just standing there eating a large fries from McDonald's. He was just plowing McDonald's and eating chicken nuggets and fries at the booth.
Freaking
and
nature.
I was like, Dave, you know, because he was huge 280 at AOL.com was his old email, right?
It's huge 285, and that's actually still his same email today.
Huge 285 at AOL.com.
He hasn't changed it.
And so it was pretty funny, man. That was his old email. So I remember emailing him and he said, come by the booth and meet me. And I went by the booth and met him. And he goes, well, let's go sit and we'll eat some more food. So we went to the food court at the Mandalay Bay.
Okay.
And I got some McDonald's and we sat and ate and talked about getting huge. And, you know, it just didn't quite work out. I thought he had too many clients.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, he's got a lot of clients. You know, I kind of wanted someone to just like train me. Right.
Yeah.
And, but I remember Dave said to me, he goes, if you want to be a certain weight, you have to eat like you're already that weight. And I was like, oh, okay, done.
It sounds simple enough, but how much work was that? Now, how much did you weigh and how much were you attempting to weigh?
Well, I'd already hit 300, but it was like a messy bloated 300, you know, or like okay. 2 weeks into the diet, you're down to 280 already, you know?
Right.
And, so I was already a really big kid. You know, but my stage weight was like, you know, barely 250 at the time. It was a pretty sloppy off season.
Okay.
But I remember, you know, that really setting in. If you want to be a certain weight, you have to eat like you're already that size. So, you know, I just always took that to heart. And I think that's why that's one of the things that helped me, you know, continue to grow over the years.
I like that.
But yeah. It came slow, you know?
Yeah. Over a long period of time, man. But. You know, it was something else you mentioned was, you know, guys not getting as big as they used to. Just this past junior nationals, there were two middleweights, but there was probably, I'm going to guess, at least 30 of the guys in classic that would have fit in that division. What are your thoughts about the new divisions as far as, you know, the direction bodybuilding's going?
Well, I wish guys would get it through their heads that they don't have to do classic just because they weigh that.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, so there's all sorts of different guys doing classic right now. Some of them are born for classic. It's perfect for them. They're getting maximum out of it. Like a guy like Chris Bumstead.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris is a smart guy. He's got all the you know, the structure in the world and he can be classic and look huge. And I mean, he can make a long career out of it and bank a lot of money and be massively successful and keep his health in check and all that stuff. So that he's a perfect guy for that. But I see a lot of other guys, it's like these entry level guys have it wrong. They think, oh, well, I weigh 180, so I should do classic because that's my weight for my height.
Hmm.
And I'm like, well, okay, you want to be a bodybuilder. Why don't you just do the bodybuilding class? First of all, you'll probably win it because you're shredded. and then you can just build on that, and you're not stuck at 180 next year again when you go back and do the same class again, and you got to get your weight back under. Like, they're sticking themselves in a class that kind of locks them in.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of them do move to bodybuilding, but I see a lot of bodybuilders move into classic. And I feel like it's a, and I hate to say this because there's a bunch of awesome guys doing classic that should stay in classic.
Absolutely.
Because it's perfect for them. But I feel like doing classic sometimes is a little bit of a cop out because they don't want to, they're like, oh, well, I'd have to eat a lot to get bigger and I'd have to put a bunch of size on and I'll just stay here at, you know, 179 or whatever I weigh for my height and I don't have to grow. But I also, there's something else, man. If I'm going to get peeled, if I'm going to suffer and do all the cardio and get striated, I'm showing my fucking glutes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to, you know, like, there's lots of shows where I got in that type of condition where I couldn't wait to turn around and hit the ham and the glutes and the back double by and yeah. smoke everybody.
And if you're going to diet, and, you're not going to take it short of that, right?
No. And then what kills me is there's these guys up there that have striated glutes, but they're wearing the classic shorts. Yeah. So you can't see them.
Yeah.
And it almost takes away from their hard work. I'm like, man, if you were showing your glutes, people would realize how shredded you were.
Yeah.
And it would look awesome. And you'd probably win your class as a bodybuilder, even though you think you're too small for bodybuilding.
I get it. Yeah, I agree.
Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of the bodybuilders now, like what's happened is classic has sucked a bunch of the good structure out of the bodybuilding class.
Yeah.
So you go to the entry level shows and a lot of the bodybuilders are the guys with the poor structure.
Right.
That feel like they can't go to classic. So they're staying in bodybuilding. Whereas if some of the classic guys would just stay in bodybuilding too, they'd smoke them and win anyways.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There were some great bodybuilders in classic at that show. But like I said, only two middleweights. So
plus like the front lat spread was always my lights out pose.
Oh yeah. I mean,
you know, you go to classic, you can't hit a front lat spread. You're mandatories now and no most muscular.
Right. I mean, they're good. That's the funnest one.
Yeah. I mean, I want to hit a most muscular and stick my tongue out, you know, that's bodybuilding. I get it. I get why it's there. And I actually like the division. And I think some of the guys are incredible.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of other dudes doing classic that should just stay in bodybuilding.
So it needs a little time maybe. And maybe people mm-hmm. will sort
themselves out. It'll balance out. Yeah. It'll balance out. I think there'll be a shift.
I think, it, so, you know, I talked to Lats. He's one of the guys who runs the Professional Muscle message board. So he, you know, he sees a lot of what's going on, what type of chemical enhancement people are using. You know, we hear the excuse that guys say that they don't want to have to run the cycles that the big guys do. But in his experience, yeah, they're, from what I've seen too, and what Lats is saying, guys are still dosing just as high for classic.
Yeah, it, nothing changed at all. They're taking just as much stuff, and they're doing a classic division.
Yeah.
So plus that never floated with me anyways. I mean, I competed on very low stacks for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
And managed to do really well. And I always thought everyone was taking too much stuff, you know? So I don't know. Maybe there's just so much shitty stuff out there. Everyone's got to take three times as much.
So, you know, catch me up on what's going on with your bodybuilding. You know, a while back you had the quad tear. What ended up panning out with that?
Yeah, so the quad tear actually went really well for as far as quad tears go.
Dude, I got to tell you, man. And listen, and I can't remember if I said this the last time I had you on because it's been like a year now. But I was inspired by you because I've never torn a quad. You know, I'm knocking on wood right now. Never torn a muscle. But listen, I've gotten hurt, and I've gotten hurt to the point where I'm taken out of the gym. And the first thing that goes when you get hurt is your attitude. Man, I saw your videos and stuff, and I know you were speaking from your heart. You had such a good attitude. You're like, well, I just got to fix this now.
Yeah, I don't know if that was just survival, I think. Huh. I mean, you know, if you would have asked me, you know, what would your attitude be if you tore your quad? I mean,
yeah.
You'd be like, oh, fuck, I'd be, you know. And I'm not saying it wasn't hard. I mean, there's days where I was in the shower on my crutches just crying. Whew. Because you're standing there on your crutches in the shower. You can't even shower without become worrying about falling in the shower. I'm on my crutches and you're just like, you think, man, this is fucking brutal.
Yeah.
Like, this sucks beyond belief. You know, you look down at your leg and it just looks pathetic. Like, you've never even lifted a weight a day in your life. And, you know, you can't bend your knee, you know, more than 30 degrees. And you're just like, oh, I'm crippled. Like, what use am I to anybody, you know?
Hmm.
Your girlfriend's getting drinks for you because you're sitting there with your foot elevated. Just feel like, you know, you feel like a loser. But those are fleeting moments that kind of, and then you got to push them out and get back to the reality of dealing with it, you know? And so I think as long as those, the positive thoughts win out over the negative stuff, you know, you can keep your attitude good. But I mean, I remember when I went in for surgery, my doctor came and he had like a resident with him.
Okay.
And they were wheeling me into the operating room. And I was like joking around and laughing and stuff. And I was telling all the nurses like, oh, I'm really happy to see you. And the resident said to me, he goes, I've never wheeled anyone into surgery who had a big smile on their face. Huh. And I said, oh, well, I go, the second I wake up, my recovery starts. So of course I'm happy. Like, I'm so happy to be here right now getting fixed. You know, I can't progress until you guys reattach this. And the second I wake up, I'm on the other side of this.
Wow.
And he said, man, that's like an awesome attitude. And it was just, I don't know, it was just the only attitude I could think of having because, you know, I wanted to recover, right?
Yeah.
And so I remember the second I woke up, I was like, okay, the clock starts.
Wow.
Fixed now. It's reattached. Things are healing now. And like I'm visualizing the collagen fibers forming together and visualizing the, like, you know, all the cellular stuff happening where tissues regenerating and, you know, like I'm thinking on that level. I'm thinking, okay, the clock starts now, you know, and it was just, you know, I called Branch Warren the day before my surgery. I called Branch Warren and talked to him and he told me, you know, gave me a bunch of tips on how to handle it and what to do and what, you know, what to focus on. And Branch is just such an animal. Like that guy just like, you know, I thought he was going to give me this big, like complicated rehab program that he did. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he goes, no, I did towel drags, which is where you sit in a chair and you put your foot on a towel and you curl your hamstring.
Okay.
You know, so you're just like trying to work on the range of motion, right? You know, at first you can only curl it a few degrees and then, you know, over time you get to a 90 degree bend, you know, and he said, I just did towel drags and like, you know, little quad flexes and I just worked on my range until my heel touched my butt. And then once my heel touched my butt, I trained.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that sounds very basic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's all I did. I just worked on range. And then at the, like, it was like the 10 or 11 week mark, I could touch my heel to my butt. And then I got under an empty leg press and started going.
Wow.
And I treated it like a contest prep, you know? So everything I did was all around my knee. So I was like, I had this huge row of vitamins and stuff I was taking. And, you know, I had the peptides. I was using BPC 157 and TB 500.
Okay.
And I had some omnitropin, like some good growth.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That I had it in the fridge, and I was saving it because I was thinking, I might do another show, you know?
Yeah.
So I was saving this. Perfect timing. I was saving this good stuff, and then all of a sudden, I blew my quad, and I was like, "Well, gonna have to use this for the best purpose I could think of, which is healing this leg." So I was doing all of that, and I was, you know, icing my knee, and you know, just doing everything I could, you know, trying to have it elevated a certain number of minutes a day, and so just like a contest prep, really, you know, thinking that way.
Wow. And where are you with it today?
It's very good. So I had initially hurt my knee in 2010, like right before the Nationals. I had a little bit of a pop in my knee, and I found out after that I had torn my quad tendon just like a small amount, and it healed up, but it left a bunch of scar tissue, and I had tendonitis in my knee.
Yeah.
And pain in my knee for, you know, 7 years straight, where I'd have to warm up my knee really good. And then, you know, I could do certain exercises heavy, other ones I couldn't do heavy. So I'd have to set my workouts up a certain way. So my quad workouts were still good and intense, but I had to be really, really careful with how I did them.
Okay.
And now that I've had my knee, then of course I blew it totally and had it reattached. And now what happened was the tendon remodeled itself completely, and I have zero tendonitis. So I have brand new quad tendon. My knee feels better than it has in the past 8 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because I had knee pain like all the time. Like even getting out of a car, if you know, you put your foot out on the ground, you get out of the car.
Yeah.
My knee would hurt doing that, and now it doesn't hurt at all. Wow. It doesn't hurt doing anything.
Wow.
You know, I can squat. I'm more comfortable squatting now than I was for the last 7 years.
Dude, that's so cool.
So I'm squatting 4 plates for reps, and which isn't like, you know, world record stuff, but I'm doing it with no knee wraps and it feels really good. You know, I'm leg pressing heavy, hack squatting heavy. You know, I can do lunges, I can do leg extensions, I can do everything now.
Yeah.
Whereas before I was really limited. Like I couldn't do lunges and I could only do really light leg extensions, and you know, certain leg presses hurt, but other leg presses didn't. You know, like I had all these fucking things I was used to.
Yeah.
So now I actually feel great. I mean, you know, I feel like my knee is good to go. If I wanted to do a prep, I could train hard enough to do it. That's for sure.
And that's kind of where I was going to head. So any thoughts at all?
I don't think I'm going to compete again.
Yeah.
I mean, I was planning on doing a show in 2017 and then blew the leg out and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, I'll rehab my leg and then, you know, we'll see where I'm at. But, you know, then we bought the gym and opened the gym and, you know, my life has sort of shifted now with what I see as my future and where my future is. And I don't know if there's any real reward to doing a show other than just personal satisfaction of doing a show. You know, it's not going to help my career in any way. Or, you know, I don't know, I did 21 shows already. I don't know if I need to go back to the well for another one.
Right on.
We'll see, though. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of things that I just kind of think have sort of taken a more important role in my life. And, you know,
you
I don't want to be
an adult.
One of these. Yeah, finally grew up a little bit, you know. I don't know if I want to be one of these guys that does one too many shows, you know.
Oh, that's a good point, man.
You know, that one too many show, you know, where you just, you looked really good, but you looked better back when you were competing before, you know.
Yeah.
I know I can get in shape. Like, getting in condition is just a matter of just shutting up and suffering, and I'm good at that. So I know I could get in shape, but, you know, I don't know if the body's going to look the way I want it to, you know. I don't know. We'll see. But I just right now I'm just enjoying the fact that I can train and I'm healthy. And for the most part, I don't have any obvious injuries. Like, you know, my shoulders get a little sore sometimes. I don't think I can do dips anymore. Every time I do dips, they flare up.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm just kind of being smart in the gym and just trying to enjoy everything. And the leg sure has healed up well, though.
That's badass, man. I'm glad to hear that. I'm going to ask you one more thing. And kind of going back to the start, you mentioned you were out at King's Gym. You know, everybody at Advices is a huge fan of James Hollingshead, and I am so impressed by the amount of size that he's accumulated just in the last year alone. I mean, the guy looked great when he turned pro, and then he just blew up from there. I know that he's a really intense trainer. Tell me, what was it like working out with him?
It was awesome. You know, he actually reminds me a ton of how I was when I was his age, you know.
I could see that from what you were saying, sure.
You know, I mean, he's got more muscle than I ever had. Like, he's, you know, he's very, very heavily muscled for his frame. So he's, you know, the new guys now, they're taking it to the next level, I think. But but the training is exactly the same, you know. So we trained really well together. He actually thought I trained fast. I mean, after the workout was over, he was like, "Oh, man, you actually train really quick." He's like,
really?
I normally train a little slower than that. His strength is off the charts, though.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know. I look back at what we were doing in the 90s and the 2000s, and I remember in the 90s, if you were squatting five plates, you were like an absolute freak.
Right.
Like, that's just, no one squatted five plates. Like, if you walked in the gym and you squatted four plates for 12 reps, everyone was like, "Holy shit." And then you put a fifth plate on, wrap up your knees and do like a good six reps with five plates.
Everybody
stopped.
You were just
a monster.
Yeah.
But I mean, James is the type of guy that he squats like six plates for 10.
Wow.
You know, seven plates for reps. I mean, these guys are so strong now. I don't quite know what has caused the strength increases that is happening with some of these guys over what we used to do 15, 20 years ago. Because we're all doing the same stuff still. I don't know if it's just the mental barriers. Like, you know, one guy runs a 4-minute mile, so then someone else, a whole bunch of people run a 4-minute mile.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably a lot to do with it, you know? I mean, I remember doing the 150-pound dumbbells on the incline back in the late 90s and the whole gym stopping.
Right.
Because they're like, "Oh my God, Ron just did the 150s on the incline for like eight reps. That's fucking nuts." And now it's like, there's like skinny guys on Instagram that don't even look like bodybuilders if you're 150 incline.
Right.
Dumbbells, you know, I can't even do them anymore. I'm too banged up, you know. And there's these kids just throwing them up. You know, I saw this kid on Instagram doing the 130s for shoulder press the other day, and they were like perfect reps.
Yeah.
And I was like, that guy weighs like 190. Like, what the hell? So strength has gotten nuts, and James has this crazy strength. So, you know, he was 20 repping the stuff I was 10 repping. You know what I mean?
That's badass.
So he's a strong dude. And it just very intense, old school, hard work, you know, the suffering, grinding, no messing around, you know. And one of the reasons why we need gyms like King's Gym and West Coast Iron and gyms like that is because it's the only place you can actually really go nuts. Because, you know, some guy made a great post. He took a screenshot of me and James training, and he posted it to the to his story, and he tagged us in it, and he wrote, you don't see people training like this at commercial gyms. And it's because a commercial gym sort of, like, kills your inner spirit to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And there's this certain amount of maniac that you just can't let out because, you know, the manager's going to come over and, you know, yell at you or ban you from the gym or something. But when you're at a gym where you can really legitimately, and not for attention, you're not doing it to impress anybody. You're just doing it to get your adrenaline maxed. You know, you're like this, where you're, like I was talking about when you're vibrating before a set. You know, like I used to say stuff to myself, like, you know, stupid stuff that sounds dumb when you repeat it. But in your head at the moment, it fires you up. Like, you know, say like slitting throats, like, fuck this set. Like, I'll die under this leg press. Like, you're saying that sort of stuff to yourself. And James has that. Like, you can see, like, when he gets under a weight, he does it. The whole world around him is completely gone.
Yeah.
And that's the mentality that you requires to be that size. You can't get that big. You can't train the way you need to train, move the weights you need to move to accumulate that amount of muscle if you're in an environment that hinders you and controls you and tames you. And so I know a lot of people say, oh, I hate it when guys yell in the gym. Well, I hate it too. I hate it when some 180-pound guy's screaming doing chin-ups.
Right.
It's stupid, right? Or screaming doing 35-pound dumbbell curls or something dumb.
Yeah, it's warm-up or something.
But if you're going to get under a leg press with 1,500 pounds on it and you have to get 20 reps and you're determined to get 20 reps and you're willing to pass out under that amount of weight, then, yeah, you can make some noise. Like, because it's not for the people watching, it's for him.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, so there's that sort of like wild man that you have to be able to summon and bring up and let out if you want to train the way you need to train to be that big. Mm-hmm. And that's why I always seeked out the gyms that would allow me to just be myself. And, you know, I've made a lot of noise on a lot of leg presses, but I always found gyms where no managers ever came and told me to be quiet.
Right on.
You know what I mean? And so that's one of the things, you know, James has a great place to train there where he can just go nuts, like absolutely ballistic. You know, you like at King's Gym, I mean, like I was screaming on a leg press because I was like, I was just trying to keep up to James.
Right.
You know, so I'm on a leg press. We're doing rest pause sets, you know, so I'm like fucking, I was dying under that thing, but I was willing to. And that's, I hope when you watch the video, people realize, you know, I'm not screaming to try to get attention. I'm making noise. I don't even realize I'm making noise.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it wasn't until I saw the video where I was like, holy shit, I was yelling like loud on that. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Because you're just so in the set, you know? And so that's what I think a lot of guys are missing now.
Right on.
But James is not missing it.
Well, hey, Ron, remind us all about the gym. Tell us all about it. Tell us about social media for you, the gym, websites, anything else. And talk about Mutant, too, please.
Yeah, well, so please check me out. Follow me on Instagram. I'm Rep300. That's my old screen name from the old board days back in 2000. Rep300 on Instagram. Definitely find me there. The gym is West Coast Iron. Everybody give it a follow because, you know, we like to show off the gym to everybody. It looks pretty badass and we're improving it all the time. So we're going to get a graffiti guy in there soon to paint it up. So that's something we're looking forward to.
That'll be cool.
So West Coast Iron on Instagram. And then of course, Mutant has been just an incredible experience for me since I got sponsored in 2011. And then I started working for the company full time in 2015. So I'm at the head office every day. I'm one of the content creators and marketing specialists there. So, you know, I have a lot to do with the video productions and all that stuff. And we really like to put out good content. And my show, Mutant on a Mission, is probably, you know, one of my favorite things to do. So if you haven't seen it, give it a watch. The King's Gym episode with James in it is the latest one that's out on our YouTube channel. So check that out. And of course, I also want to send out a shout to Gasp. Gasp has been supporting me for a long time. They're always awesome to work with, and they send me stuff constantly. And
great company.
I want to thank the people at Gasp. Yeah, they're really cool. So, it's everything's going really well. So yeah, give me a follow. I'd appreciate it.
Hell yeah, guys! I'm gonna have all this information over at the Facebook page for Advices Radio. So, you know, because I can post links over there. Of course, we can't post like direct links in Instagram. So that's where I try to direct that stuff. But I'm going to put up links to the gym, links to that particular video with James. So you guys can go straight there and check that out. And check out all the other Mutant on a Missions, because you guys have really done a service to some really awesome gyms around the world. And it's super inspirational, man. It's that kind of stuff. I can watch those videos and I get pumped up for my next workout, man. Reminds me about my love and the passion, you know, for doing this stuff.
I really appreciate that.
All right, guys, for another episode of Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with IFBB Pro, Big Ron Partlow. All right, guys, and back with us as promised, Eric Markowitz. We're going to do an educational segment about heart health. Eric, we had some really great feedback the other episode that you were on a couple weeks back, and I much appreciate having you. I'm sure that the listeners are all excited too.
Great. Yeah, just a little bit of my background. So I'm a patent holder for three of the major pro hormones that are left on the market that are legal. So that's 1-Andro, 4-Andro, and 19-Norandro. I've got some patent pendings on a bunch of the newer progestins that are coming out, which should be, you know, the 1-hydroxyprogesterone and a few of the others. Those are patent pending, not patented. So that's kind of a little bit of my background. I've also authored 2 books and worked with quite a few steroid experts in the past. I kind of call myself uncle of pro hormones. I mean, Patrick Arnold is certainly the father or grandfather of pro hormones.
Yes.
I came in under him, certainly. And, you know, Bruce Neller is another one that's really good. Bill Llewellyn. Those are all great guys to reference on this topic. But Pat certainly is one of the premium experts in this and, you know, pretty intelligent guy in general. So
absolutely.
Anyway, so today we're here to talk about heart health because, you know, people that are using steroids and lifting heavy are going to put a lot of pressure on the heart. And it's important to have a, you know, healthy cardiovascular system. So do you ever concern yourself with that, Scott, at all?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I do everything that, you know, bodybuilders normally do. We, you know, get our blood work done. My doctor has me do an EKG every year. I don't know how beneficial that is. She said that there is some slight left ventricle growth, but she said it doesn't seem to be anything abnormal for an athlete. And in her opinion, what she said is the key is to continue monitoring it to watch the rate at which it grows. And she said there's nothing alarming at this time. But I'm excited to have you here because I'm sure that there's a lot more that I could know.
Sure. So, I mean, let's talk about some of the things that cause, you know, arterial damage. The first thing is a lack of estrogen. So one of the problems that bodybuilders always have is that they want to just take massive amounts of anti-estrogens just because, right? So they're you know, slamming down, you know, all sorts of aromatase inhibitors. They're slamming down, you know, competitive inhibitors like tamoxifen. And that's not really healthy. So we need estrogen. It's there for a reason. It is not public enemy number one. In fact, if you look at the studies that, you know, are out, the estrogen receptor beta is very, very important for growing muscle and gaining muscle. So by knocking down your estrogen too low, not only you're causing arterial problems, but you're causing yourself to not grow as effectively. So something to think about when people fire down, you know, whatever, 3 milligrams of Arimidex every day, and they just, you know, continue to take more and more of this kind of stuff. More is not better when it comes to estrogen. You need estrogen in your life. You need it in your body. It doesn't make you soft and fat all the time. That's only an excess of it. So one thing that estrogen does is it increases arterial damage because it really lowers the elasticity, which means it raises up your blood pressure. So, you know, we need estrogen in the body. So make sure that you're not overdoing it on the anti-estrogens. And then the next thing would be arterial plaque. So, you know, eating crap foods, right? Like we talked about last segment. If you look at even cholesterol, right? Oxidized fats are really the bad culprit when it comes to arterial damage. So particularly oxidized cholesterol, but anything that's oxidized. When you can really, you know, compare the damages out there, two things cause arterial plaque: oxidized fats and then high sugar. So sugar also causes a lot of arterial damage. So sugar is, you know, think of it as a very reactive, very sharp molecule. So it goes in, it causes damage. It, you know, basically cuts a small tear in the artery. And then what happens is that the body doesn't want the artery to have any kind of, you know, damage at all, or any sort of, you know, where it's not smooth, it wants to be smooth. So what it does is it takes these cells and it sort of pastes over it. So imagine it's sort of, you know, it sticks to the wall and then it plasters over it with all sorts of stuff. And as that plaster keeps building up, that's what causes arterial restriction. So that's the plaquing that you hear. Hmm. So blood pressure, probably one of the most damaging things that you can think about when you're looking at heart health. And then obviously like altered lipid levels. So when you combine lipids with sugar, you know, so lipids being fats, certain types of fats that are oxidized with sugar. So cheap corn oils, things like that, combined with sugar, really cause a lot of arterial damage. So what that does is, like I said, it starts little fires in your bloodstream and your body puts out those fires and then plasters over the damage. So that causes that arterial plaquing. So we want to, you know, take some supplements. I mean, I'm a big fan of taking a lot of supplements, obviously. It's a business we're in, and it's also, you know, been a passion of mine for the last 25 years. So let's talk about some of the supplements that we can use to help reverse some of this damage. Does that seem like a good plan?
I think that sounds like a great idea, man.
Okay. Well, the first thing for arterial strength is pycnogenol. So that's pine bark extract. Hmm. It's kind of expensive, but it's extremely well studied and really good for increasing elasticity of the blood vessels. So really, if you look at something like pycnogenol, it's going to help in pretty much every capacity. So blood pressure being the major problem, if you look at even your heart growth and enlargement, typically that's going to be caused by increased blood pressure. So when you're lifting heavy, blood pressure goes up, those arteries aren't stretching and flexing the way they used to, and pycnogenol help to basically, you know, relax some of those blood vessels as well as strengthen them.
Okay.
So have you ever heard of pycnogenol before?
No, I haven't. So this is pycnogenol. How did you say that?
Pycnogenol. So yeah, pine bark extract.
Pine bark extract. What kind of a dosing would we use on this?
So I take 100 milligrams a day. It's also amazing for sunburns. Hmm. So if you are taking, if you're doing a lot of tanning, or if you're going out and hitting the sun like I've been doing this summer, I will take 600 milligrams of pycnogenol before I go out on my boat. And literally no sunscreen. I will have absolutely no sunburn whatsoever. Hmm. It is amazing stuff. It's that good of an antioxidant.
Interesting.
So, but average, you know, maintenance dose is 100 milligrams a day.
Okay.
So the next thing to help clean those arteries out is pomegranate extract. And there's a lot of cheap pomegranate extract on the market. You want to use the one with something called Puna Calgens. Okay. So Life Extension makes a really good one. It's 400 milligrams. It's pomegranate extract with Puna Calgens. So not the ellagic acid. The ellagic acid is not going to help you with arterial damage. The Puna Calgens seem to have a really good effect of cleaning the bloodstream of those, you know, those damaged lipids that are causing all the problems. So pomegranate extract is really good. Something cheap you can do that's also become kind of a fad, really great for you, by the way. And one of these days I'll do something on basically neurotransmitters, because I think that this is a big issue. But I don't know if you've heard of lecithin.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Lecithin granules.
Yes, I have.
Okay. So what those are is they contain a bunch of different fats, but for the most part, they're mostly inositol and choline.
Okay.
And, you know, acetylcholine is really good for you because it is your pretty much your main neurotransmitter when it comes to recruiting muscle cells. So one of the things you can do to squeeze out extra strength and extra lifting intensity is to take less of them before you go lift. Hmm. It also has this great effect of helping to make your arteries more supple and, you know, make them stronger. So lecithin is really cheap. You can buy a big tub of it for, I don't know, $20 or something, and it's great. So take a, you know, tablespoon of that per day.
So would you would take that, say, like with your pre-workout then?
Yep, I take it with a pre-workout. Interesting. That's exactly what I
do. And you've noticed a difference when you take this versus not.
Like I said, so what happens is you know, your brain sends a signal down and says, okay, let's recruit these muscle cells, okay? But if there's not enough acetylcholine to really tell the muscles to pull, the signal gets lost. So if you top off your acetylcholine levels, you're going to increase contractile strength because you're recruiting more muscle fibers. So it's a really good supplement to take for people that lift.
Makes sense. And we've talked a lot about acetylcholine too when we've discussed nootropics. Like you had said, it's also what did you say in regard to neurotransmitters it does?
Well, acetylcholine helps with memory. It helps with focus. It's just really one of your main ways that, you know, your brain is functioning with acetylcholine. So memory and focus being the two strongest things. I mean, it is amazing taking lecithin because I used to do speaking engagements all over the place and I could tell a difference when I had lecithin in me or not.
Huh. Interesting. So it works that quick, just like an instant type thing. It's not like it doesn't have to build up over weeks or something.
Nope. Instantly. You'll feel it the same day. I mean, it's not something you feel. It's not like a stimulant. It's just, wow. I mean, the words come out perfectly. My concepts are clear. I can think clearly. So it's really great. It's good stuff. It's
interesting.
So two minerals that you need, Scott, are potassium and magnesium. Very important. We get way too much sodium, especially as bodybuilders, right? We like to, you know, fire down the meats. And typically that's a lot of sodium. And, you know, we can offset some of that by taking some potassium. I take 300 milligrams a day of elemental potassium. So a tablet of potassium is only allowed to have 99 milligrams per tablet. That's the maximum that's allowable in the country. And then magnesium, I take about 600 milligrams per day of just standard cheap magnesium, you know, couple tablets, you know, 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day.
Okay, so you don't need anything special with this potassium or magnesium. Just, is this the same stuff that you could say get at the grocery store?
Yep. Okay. Just get potassium gluconate at the grocery store, and magnesium oxide's not the best, but it's fine. Okay. It works. We are very, very deficient in magnesium in this country. So one of the things that, you know, if you look at all the studies, our magnesium levels are, you know, at 5% what they should be, and that's causing a lot of the heart damage. So, you know, again, the thing about bodybuilders is we live an extreme lifestyle. I mean, if you look at it, and while we take a lot of pills and things, we certainly should add in enough things to help with our heart health and with our you know, overall health.
Yeah. Hey, well, I got you here. Just to sidebar, I know we're talking about the heart, but, you know, speaking of minerals and magnesium in particular, I've used like a magnesium spray that helps with pain in the joints and stuff like that. And it helps with cramps and, you know, spasms and everything. Will you get a similar effect from that taking it orally as well? If you're dealing with, say, cramps from dehydration and stuff when you're dieting?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Magnesium completely can eliminate cramping. Yeah, I mean, potassium and magnesium in particular will help to reduce cramping. So that's interesting that topically it works. So, you know, those kinds of things are really fascinating because they shouldn't work that way. Typically a topical is going to be systemic, but it just doesn't seem to work that way. Much more gets into a localized area than people could ever imagine. It's really fascinating that it works as well as it does.
It's kind of messy, the stuff I have. It ends up leaving like a, you know, a coating, a white film over your skin. But when I used to have knee issues, instead of being a smart guy and taking time off, I just spray my knees with magnesium, you know?
Yeah, you could tell the difference, eh?
Absolutely. Yeah. I shared it with a lot of the guys in the gym and stuff too. It's available in health food stores as like sprays and roll-ons, usually kind of like an oily base to it. It's good stuff. You know what? I believe that Tony Freeman has a spray, a magnesium spray that he sells. But there's a lot of them on the market too.
Yeah, that's fascinating actually, that it works topically like that. Never heard that, but you know, it certainly makes sense. I mean, one of the things that I got started in was topicals. And so, you know, that was an area of passion of mine. And so, like I said, it's amazing how many things work topically that, you know, shouldn't, and work not only just topically from a systemic level, but down to the, you know, the localized tissue, which is, like I said, it kind of shouldn't, right? You got all that skin and fat and blood vessels and everything. And then you have the myelin for the muscle, but it really does get into the localized tissue. It's crazy.
Yeah. And we did talk a little bit about topicals and topical preparations the last time we had you on. Guys, I got to say, too, I'm sure you all heard it, but if you didn't, just go back a couple episodes, and we had a whole episode with Eric, and man, you covered all sorts of great stuff. Like I said, I got so much great feedback, but I'm totally sidetracking us here, though. You were on potassium at 300 a day, magnesium at 600 a day, and that's when I derailed us.
Yeah, so let's. The next thing is to talk about stroke, right? So clotting is typically what causes a stroke. You can also cause a stroke by having that restricted artery like we talked about. But when you combine clotting with the restricted artery, you get a stroke. So that's not a good thing. That's a really, really bad thing to have. It's not very common, but for older bodybuilders in particular, it's something that you certainly want to be careful with. And particularly if you look at the types of steroids that people are using, you know, we talked about with estrogen, dry steroids are going to have more side effects. So if people are pounding down a lot of Trenbolone or even a lot of Deca or, you know, a lot of Anadrol, those are typically going to have higher side effects from a arterial perspective than something like testosterone, which will obviously convert into estrogen at a pretty high level.
Okay.
So, you know, it's certainly dependent on what kind of steroids, but almost everybody and their brother who's competing is using Trenbolone. I mean, everyone's in love with Trenbolone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of am glad that, you know, I've divorced myself from any companies because now I can just talk, you know, openly about, you know, I don't promote steroid use, but I mean, it is what it is, right? People use the stuff and there's no sense in, you know, them being unhealthy because they can't talk about it.
Sure. Sure. No, that's why I love having you on here. This is good information.
Yeah. So in that, you know, to prevent stroke and keep your blood thin, you want to take some baby aspirin, right? Take a baby aspirin every day. Helps thin the blood.
Okay.
Fish oil is great for that. So fish oil is going to help keep the blood thin, keep the arteries clean. Krill oil, believe it or not, is interesting as well. Krill oil is similar to fish oil, but it also has some additional things in it, some phospholipids, they're called. So they actually strengthen the cell membrane.
Hmm.
And it has astaxanthin, which is a really good antioxidant. So krill oil is good. So I take the triple strength fish oils. You can buy those at the grocery store too. They're usually on sale at Kroger if you guys have those around you. But, you know, you'll get them, buy one, get one free all, you know, all day long. They're always kind of on sale, one of the brands.
Yeah.
And krill oil, you know, you take like a 1,000 milligrams a day is fine. And then I mix that with high gamma vitamin E. So let's talk about vitamin E because people probably need to know. Vitamin E comes in multiple isomers, okay? Just much like my prohormones have isomers, vitamin E has isomers. So there's alpha tocopherol, which is what the cheap vitamin E you get in the stores. Then there's beta, gamma, and delta tocopherol. Well, they found that gamma tocopherol is probably the healthiest for us. And what they found is you might be actually even doing damage if you take too much alpha tocopherol because you're basically starving your body of the gamma vitamin E. So the cheap vitamin E, the alpha tocopherol, particularly the vitamin E that's synthetic, which is the DL alpha tocopherol, synthetic and cheap vitamin E is actually really not that good for you.
Really?
And it doesn't really help. So it actually can do damage. I remember doing some studies on baby formula for one of my clients, and they found, I believe, that the natural vitamin E was, I can't remember, but it was like maybe 4 to 7 times more absorbable than the cheap synthetic vitamin E that they were using in baby formula. So it's certainly something. So 200 IUs of high gamma vitamin E per day is really good. You can find it on Amazon or anywhere else. I mean, it's all out there. It's, you know, easy to find now.
Okay.
So now for what you're looking at is your heart damage and your enlarged heart, because when you're, you know, got a couple things going on, right? You've got the increased, you know, anabolism from the steroids. Plus, you know, typically when you're lifting heavy, you're holding your breath, you're increasing that arterial pressure. And so I take coenzyme Q10. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before.
Absolutely.
So that's really good for strengthening the heart. It increases your mitochondrial protection as well as the output. So the mitochondrial, they're little cells basically within your cell that create all the power in your body.
Hmm.
So really important to keep the mitochondria functioning well. So there's two forms of it. There's the ubiquiquinone and ubiquiquinol. And you want to take the quinol, the OL form. So, I take 50 milligrams a day, really, really good for heart health, good for anti-aging, keeps your skin young, all that kind of stuff. Along with that, you know, acetyl L-carnitine is really good and propionyl L-carnitine for the heart. Both of those increase the, you know, ability for the body to burn fats as energy, which is what the, you know, the heart typically works on. And so PCAR, you know, the propionyl carnitine is actually better than the acetyl carnitine, but it's a little harder to find. I'm going to take the time to plug, a guy that licenses my pro hormone, which is High Tech, pharmaceuticals. They have a Carnislim product from High Tech. That's really good. It, includes, I think 4 different types of carnitine, but it's got acetyl carnitine as well as propionyl carnitine. And it's relatively cheap and good stuff. So, you know, that's certainly something that you want to think about. I mean, I know there's a lot of pills here, but kind of you can pick and choose and, you know, set your budget and, you know, pick which ones are kind of the best for you. But that's a really good ingredient because it increases fat burning. It increases, you know, cellular energy.
Hmm.
It's just a really healthy supplement to take acetyl L-carnitine or propionyl L-carnitine.
Interesting.
Or, yeah, both if you could.
Yeah, I
and
guess.
Kind of the final thing is to lower homocysteine. And okay. Then let's talk about general health. So homocysteine is, you know, I did a lot of research on homocysteine for anxiety. Homocysteine is a really interesting molecule in the bloodstream. So what it seems to do is this. So imagine, Scott, you know, we're in a, you know, a primal, you know, body, right? And there's a tornado coming. Any sort of stress, right? Homocysteine will go through the roof. It actually inhibits aromatase, so your test levels go up, and it locks your dopamine D3 receptor. So what it does is it locks that receptor, so and that's the receptor for short-term neuroplasticity or short-term ability to change your mind. So what it does is it keeps you hyper-focused on things. So we would be hyper-focused on that tornado instead of saying, hey, let's go to the gym or let's go grab a steak. We're like, man, we need to get out of here. There's a tornado. Right. And that's all we can think about. So in a short-term basis, that's really a good thing. But with chronic stress, homocysteine levels are chronically elevated, and that causes us to be able to not let go, right? We fixate on things. So if you look at that, it's really important to keep homocysteine levels low. It also causes arterial damage because it does lower that estrogen. It seems to do other things, but you know that's one of the things that it does is it lowers the estrogen of your amount in the bloodstream. And so, you know, homocysteine is kept low by taking high doses of folic acid. So I take 2,400 micrograms a day, very cheap in the grocery store. B6, I take 300 milligrams a day, and B12, 2,400 micrograms a day sublingually. That's what I do. And then, you know, kind of the final things would be to take a good multivitamin, just to kind of top off all your levels, make sure it's complete with all the different minerals in there. A lot of them have vitamins, but many do not have minerals. So look for one that has a broad spectrum of minerals in it, you know, because that's far more important than the vitamins. We get a lot of vitamins. There's tons of vitamin reinforced things out there, right? Vitamin waters and all those things, you know, even Red Bulls, right? They have B vitamins and things in there, but not too many things have minerals in it. Okay. So it's important to have that good spread of minerals as well.
Do they need to be, like, I've seen some people say that, like, they prefer the chelated minerals, that's going to absorb better. Does it have to be that way, or can they be unbound?
They're certainly better. I mean, you know, to run out and buy a Centrum is better than nothing, but probably not very good. So, you know, spend $25 on a multivitamin for yourself and, you know, get something that's got some good chelated minerals in there. So what that is for the audience is that's the mineral, and it's typically bound to like an amino acid, or it's bound to something organic. So instead of being a little chunk of rock, it's actually bound to something organic so the body can take it in easier. So it'll be, all different types of things, but even like gluconates, right? So that's just sugar and whatever mineral that you're bound to, right? So magnesium gluconate or potassium gluconate, it's just easier for the body to absorb. So they're cheap and available. The final things are, just use olive oil as liberally as you can. It burns fat, but if you're going to buy olive oil, make sure you use the unfiltered cold pressed olive oil. Do not get the filtered stuff. So you want the stuff that looks cloudy. That has all the healthy things in there to help to, you know, I mean, it does literally olive oil literally does everything, but helps burn fat. But all the polyphenols in there, that's the stuff that makes it cloudy. And that's what's really good for your heart.
I didn't know this. So what's the name of this type of olive oil?
So they would just call it cold pressed, and it would typically be unfiltered.
Okay.
Right. So, that's or unrefined, if you will. That's another way to look at it. Again, you can see because it's got some sediment at the bottom, and it's typically cloudy. It's not ultra, you know, clear like the regular olive oils that you would buy.
Oh, I follow you. So,
yeah, you want to get the stuff that looks dirty because that's what's really good for you.
Okay.
And by taking out, you know, all of the polyphenols, it actually, you know, olive oil is still great for you, but it's nowhere near as good as having the polyphenols in there.
Okay. So I'm a little overwhelmed at this point. Like you said, you can pick and choose through all the stuff. I've been writing each one of these supplements down along with the dosing as we go here. And guys, if you haven't done so, I would suggest you grab a notepad. And I say this at the beginning of the show too, you know, grab a notepad to write these things down. And the nice thing is that with a podcast, you can hit rewind to hear it again. I have, you know, three different lists here of things, that revolve around dealing with homocysteine, clotting and stroke, and then for just, you know, heart health in general here. How do I narrow this down? Let me ask you that.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, so here's the reality of it. This stuff is relatively expensive. And yeah, how do you narrow it down? So you want to, I mean, let's look at your budget, right? Let's find the cheapest stuff that we can that's going to make the most difference in what you're doing. So for blood pressure, the easiest and cheapest thing you can do for blood pressure is take magnesium potassium. Okay. It's cheap. It's available everywhere at every grocery store. And, you know, it's literally going to be $6 to buy magnesium potassium. It's very inexpensive. Okay. So that's something that you can look at. Lecithin, again, $20 for a, you know, for a big tub of lecithin, plus it's going to help you lift harder. That's definitely worth it. The pycnogenol and pomegranate, much more expensive and maybe not worth it for you if you're, you know, 26 and you, you know, feel in pretty good shape. You know, if you look at like the, you know, stroke and things like that, you know, just a good fish oil supplement is a much better thing to take than nothing at all. So, you know, fish oil is really good. You might want to invest in a carnitine, you know, in that Carnoslim product, just because, again, it helps with performance. You know, and then if you look at just a general health type situation, take a good multivitamin, right? That's going to have B vitamins in there. And then, you know, when you're looking at cooking, don't buy cheap corn oil. You know, buy, spend a few bucks and, you know, wait till it's on sale and get some olive oil that's unfiltered. You know, like we, you know, we have a bunch of Italian markets out this way, right? So being in Michigan, Scott, you know, and, you know, they have the best olive oil because they, you know, they like it unfiltered and it's really dirty. So it looks great. So, you know, that's how I would look at, you know, structuring it to at least get a baseline. And then, you know, you can look at some vitamin E and things like that. But for the most part, those would be kind of the basics. And then, as we get older and, you know, we have more money, right, we want to keep alive and look good, and we'll spend that money in order to do so.
And it'll probably take a little bit more to stay healthy at that point too, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, college kids probably just going to want to take the basics, right? Good multivitamin, cooking their stuff in olive oil, some magnesium, potassium, fish oil, lecithin, they're good. You know, if you're an older fellow like me and you want to make sure you don't drop dead, then, you know, you're going to spend a few more dollars. So,
okay.
You know, that's... But you also have to look at it. I mean, what does it cost to go out for a good meal, right? I mean, we go out and spend $100 on, you know, a meal all day long. So, you know, to spend $100 on vitamins, it seems like a big deal, but we drop so much money on stupid BS. It's definitely worth it to, you know, to spend a few extra dollars. So.
Okay, cool, cool. Because I know sometimes what happens is we, you know, we have a podcast and we talk about all these great health supplements, and then people just feel like, well, I'm going to throw my hands in the air because I can't afford to buy all this. But I think you just laid it out in a very well put way that people can get the foundation going first. And all those things are important. I would, you know, I would suggest all those things too, just out the gate, man. Just for and even for more purposes than just we speak of, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you got to realize, you know, we have an audience that ranges from, you know, kids that just started lifting to competitive, you know, professional bodybuilders. They're using everything from, you know, DMP to Lasix to, you know, so those kinds of things are, you know, that we have a big range that we're hitting. So that's why you might see, you know, for a guy that's on everything known to man, they're going to want to take a lot of things to reduce those effects. Like I said, for a college kid, you know, just take the basics, you know, just stuff that, you know, will be good for you and not cause any kind of issues. So, you know, and it's going to, you know, put you in the poorhouse. So what I'll do though, is I'll do I'll start doing a quick write-up of these, sort of a recap.
Oh, great.
And then I'll post them. I have a public Facebook page. It's just Eric Marshewitz, MARCHEWITZ. And just, like my public Facebook page, and I'll start posting that stuff up there.
Awesome, man. I appreciate that. And I will, I'll definitely link everybody to that too, so they can check it out. Is that all you've got for us then?
Yeah, that's plenty. So, you know, I don't know how long you want to be on here, but I figured
this is perfect.
20 to 30 minutes should be good.
Yeah, this is perfect, Eric. So, what's your day holding for you? What does your day look like today? Let's let the audience know.
Today, I'm going to write some articles and do some research on, and hopefully have a contract coming to develop a natural growth hormone releasing supplement, which is something that I've done for years. Just got to bone back up in that department. Because GH is certainly something that, you know, is good for the anti-aging crowd. But, you know, they don't want to use peptides and things like that. And, you know, obviously they're quasi-legal. So using natural things that are similar to peptides is what I'm trying to dig into. And then I'm going to pick my son up.
Nice. So, how's the, before we spoke, you were saying you were experimenting with an acne product and you were looking into possibly doing like some hair loss stuff. Any developments on those things in the last couple of weeks?
Yep. I've got, some orders in for some test, some test batches. So I'm going to make up some test batches here in the next week. And then, yeah, I've got a bunch of like little projects like that to finish off. I've got a new pro hormone that I want to test.
Ooh.
So, you know, that's something that, you know, I just got a sample in and I just want to see how it performs. You know, it's one of the progestins I talked about and it's never been seen before. So just trying to tie up some loose ends with all the different supplements and projects. But, you know, like I said, I really kind of want to get into the cosmetic side because I think, you know, we spend so much time in the gym that, you know, there's all those things that you talked about, like with acne and hair loss that, you know, we want to, you know, fix those things as well. So certainly, you know, that's where I'm gonna be spending my time, but it takes time to get all that stuff ready.
All right. Well, I think this is great, man. And, you know, if you're up for it, I'd love to have you back more often. Like I said, the audience loves hearing this stuff and I feel like they can really benefit from this education too.
Yep. Anytime. And like I said, I'll put together the kind of the basics and then, you know, a little bit more of the advanced stuff and post it to the public webpage.
All right, guys. Well, for another episode of Advices Radio, I've got Eric Markowitz. I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon.
Take care, guys. Thanks.
All right, guys, this has been another episode of Advices Radio. This is number 71 with Big Ron Partlow, IFBB Pro, and Eric Markowitz talking about heart health supplements. If you guys have enjoyed the show, then please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And go ahead and follow at Advices Radio Network on Instagram. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate your support, and we will keep cranking out the shows.